This is I Choose Life News and Views, sponsored by Indiana Right to Life and Allen County Right to Life, committed to defending innocent human life for all people of all ages. Your hosts are Kathy Humbarger, Abigail Lorenzen, and Scott Kump.
Welcome to I Choose Life News and Views. I'm Kathy Humbarger.
I'm Abigail Lorenzen.
And I'm Scott Kump. I Choose Life News and Views is a joint project of Allen County Right to Life, Indiana Right to Life, and Bot Radio Network in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
This program is sponsored in part by Rock Hill Design, serving nonprofits and entrepreneurs with personal branding, print design, and web creation. Learn more at rockhilldesign.com.
Our guest with us this morning is Melissa Oden. Hi, Melissa.
Good morning.
So, Melissa, you've been on just recently. I think back in March, Kathy had you on to talk about your new book, You Carried Me. How is that book going?
Yeah, you know what? It's gone very well. It's one of those things where, honestly, if it only sold one copy and it made a difference, I would be happy about that. Mm-hmm. But it's been wonderful. It's getting in the hands of people who, you know, have had past abortions, who need to heal, folks who maybe aren't sure how they feel about the issue of abortion. And so, yeah, most of the feedback has been incredibly positive, and I'm thankful for that.
Good. And we'll be having those books for sale at the Allen County Right to Life Banquet on October 9th. You'll have a table out there. For those of you who don't know, Melissa Oden is our keynote speaker this year at our annual banquet. So that's October 9th. Put it on your calendars. iChooseLife.org has the tickets there, or you're always welcome to call the office for those tickets as well. So we're going to talk to Melissa a little bit, give you sort of a taste of who she is, but then also talk about some of the other aspects of Melissa's vocation as a pro-life speaker. Some pieces that I think don't get talked about probably as much as the other pieces, especially Melissa, considering your incredible story as an abortion survivor. I think this will be an interesting aspect to have people hear about your work in the public policy arena as well.
Yeah, it's one of those things, right? When people come to an event, they're not sure what they're going to hear. And, you know, in reality, I could spend hours up there talking to people about what happened to me, what happened to my birth mother, the work that I do. So this is a great chance to give people some information that maybe they aren't going to hear that night.
And that's exactly it. We're talking about all different stuff than what you're going to hear that night. So this is not a replacement for coming to the Allen County Right to Life Banquet.
Exactly. Exactly. You said it right there.
You still have to come.
There's more.
There's more. Though, for the sake of our listeners and just giving them an idea of who you are, Melissa, can you give us just the flyby version of your history and why you can be such a significant and such a powerful voice in the pro-life movement?
Yeah, it was actually 40 years ago yesterday. I just turned 40 yesterday.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh, congrats. Happy birthday.
40's good. Yeah, 40's good. Now, 40 years ago, I actually survived what people call a failed abortion. I'm a little biased. I think it was successful in the respect that I lived, but that was just simply not the intent. So 40 years ago, I now know that my birth mother, as a college student, actually had a saline infusion abortion forced upon her. It was her own family who forced it upon her. My grandmother was a nurse, well connected with a local abortionist, and so I was born out of wedlock, was not what they had planned. And so the abortion was forced upon her, and that type of procedure was meant to poison me to death in the womb. And, you know, I was not meant to be born alive. That was not the plan. But quite clearly, God had other plans for me. So gratefully, I was born alive. Even though demands were made to leave me to die, a nurse actually rushed me off to the NICU. She wouldn't allow me to just be left to die. And so that's when medical care was started that ultimately saved my life.
Every time I hear it, it's incredible to me.
Well, and it's amazing because I now have had contact with a nurse who was actually there when I was rushed to the NICU. She and I were just exchanging messages again this morning because it's a day that so many of them never forget either. And I think that's one of those things we recognize in the pro-life movement, but isn't always talked about in our culture, is that abortion truly does impact so many other lives. It's not this my body, my choice kind of thing. It's,
right. You
know what, this has an impact on multiple lives.
You know, I was talking to somebody about you just yesterday, actually, on your birthday, happen chance. And they asked me, was it the nurse who started the adoption process for you? How did that adoption process for you get started?
That would be a lingering question. You know, it's interesting. The more I find out, honestly, the more questions I have. And, you know, I think you learn to live in peace with that. I think it would drive me up one wall and down the other if I spent all my time trying to figure it out. But what I do know now is that after I was rushed to the NICU, my grandmother actually gave them the directive that day, the nurses, and said, don't you ever tell my daughter, my birth mother, don't you ever tell her that this baby was born alive. Nobody talked about it. And so my suspicion and my birth mother's suspicion is that my grandmother is the one who was able to make that happen.
Okay.
And now whether, maybe the courts took pity on the whole situation and thought maybe they should get involved because things wouldn't have been good for me, I don't know. But we have every good reason to believe that my grandmother was responsible for that too.
Wow. Okay. Did you ever get to meet your grandma or talk to her?
I didn't. She okay. passed away a number of years ago, and I actually blogged about it finally last night. There's so much that happens, I think, for survivors behind the scenes that we don't talk about. And Gianna, Jessen, and I talk about this, sometimes, that there are just these layers of grief and things that people probably will not ever understand. And that's okay. But I feel like part of what I need to do is help people understand this is what it's like for us. And so I finally blogged about it last night that, even though I think about my grandmother so much on my birthday because, she was responsible for so much, my heart breaks for her on that day because I always wonder what drove her to that point to make those decisions and what was it like for her? I mean, here I was lying in the hospital where she was working, right? I was there for 21 days before I was sent to another hospital.
Yeah.
What was that like for her? Did she despise me? I don't know. Did it somehow stir her heart and she felt compassion and guilt and maybe that's why I was placed for adoption? I don't know. It's kind of wild, isn't it, when you think about that?
Yeah, and I feel like too, for me, we're really good at holding grudges as a human race and that would be, the role that your grandmother would play puts her in such a spot where it would be easy to hold a grudge against her and to sort of turn her into this twisted character that's easy to be angry at. But it sounds like you've had some time to work on that, and that's admirable.
I think somebody asked me once, how do you forgive somebody if you've never met them? And that was an interesting question to me because in some respects, I think it's easier to forgive somebody you haven't met because you don't have this long history, right? You don't have the time after time and suffering after suffering.
Right.
But at the same time, I think it could be harder to forgive someone when you haven't met them because you only have the bad stuff, right?
Unless somebody is able to fill you in on some good stuff, like, oh, this is, where she was coming from, or this is the situation that put her in a spot where she did what she did. Yeah. There is a phrase, and I don't know who came up with it or where I heard it really, but it sticks with me all the time. And it's understanding replaces impatience.
Oh,
and I feel like this is one of those situations where the more you can understand about a person, the more patient you can be with them. And in this case, the more forgiving, because there's stories that create motives behind what everybody does. That's sort of an interesting little spot. If your life was my life, that I think I would have trouble with.
I think it's one of those things too, though, that it's okay to love someone and not condone their actions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
right.
I think we live in this world that says, well, if you speak out against something, you don't love someone. That's not true, right? Those two things are not interconnected. You can love someone and say, guess what? What you did to me was not okay. That was not okay, but I'm going to love you anyway. I love you anyway because you are just a fellow human being. And I think that's what makes it easy for me to love and forgive her is I simply say, yeah, you know what? You're a human being and you're broken just like me.
Wonderful. Thanks for that insight. That's a great little quote. It's possible to love someone and not condone their actions. That's awesome. So let's talk a little bit about what we told the listeners we would talk about. not that we've been, slacking in that, but your involvement in the public policy arena is something that really interests me, I think. A lot of times as U.S. citizens, we downplay the impact that we can have in public policy, in the lawmaking process, even in the election process. We say, oh, well, I go and I cast my vote. Well, that is the tip of the iceberg of what we can do. And for you, you have a particular life story that allows you to have some audiences with these legislators, especially in very particular moments that carry a lot of weight in decision making. But I think your story and your history, your involvement can be an inspiration for some of our listeners too, because really it takes everybody communicating with their legislators to have good public policy be passed. So can you tell us a little bit specifically about testifying for pieces of legislation?
Yeah, I started speaking out 10 years ago. And, you know, funny thing is, my background actually initially in college was political science.
Oh.
And kind of got burned. I got burned a little bit, you know, and was silenced. And so I ended up changing course. But it's funny, right? Because God brought me back and said, I meant it, right?
Yeah, you're not done. Like, that wasn't the greatest experience,
exactly.
But you're not done. Yeah.
And I love that, though, because like most people, right, I think if somebody got a phone call and said, oh, hey, by the way, we need you to testify before Congress, most people would go, nope.
Mm-hmm. Nope. It's such a foreign idea to us, and on top of
the intimidation factor. Yeah, these powerful people, I can't do that. And the reality is most people may not ever be called to testify before Congress. But like you said, Abigail, we are all called to get involved. So whether you are calling your legislator, you're going in person for a legislative day, you're writing a letter, there are just so many ways that people can get involved. And the important thing is that we actually do it, because they do listen. They want to hear from us. And if we're not telling them, then they're not going to hear it. And so I testified before Congress twice in the last couple of years. Back in 2015, it was around this time that Gianna Jessen and I testified before the House of Representatives in regards to defunding Planned Parenthood. And then the second time in early 2016 was with the Senate when we were discussing infant born alive legislation, which always is horrific to me that I have to actually say, you know what, it's not okay to kill other human beings. And if you're trying and they're born alive, you need to provide them medical care. It is almost surreal sometimes that we have to stand up and say those things, but we have to.
Right. And for you, Melissa, that probably strikes a particular chord because that is your story. You know, you're standing in front of these people saying, if you pass this legislation that says you don't have to give medical care to people who you were trying to kill and did so unsuccessfully, you are saying that my life doesn't matter. I am exactly the type of person that you guys are talking about when you're talking about this bill. And if that was me, Melissa, I feel like I'd have a really hard time doing that. So I'm glad that you can do it.
Well, my husband's really great, right? Because before I testified before the House of Representatives, I was, of course, scared to death, right? And my husband said, hey, listen, you just remember, you know more about this than any of them do.
It's true. It's so true.
So I hope your listeners think of that too, right? Like, they are well-informed because of them tuning in to you, because of, you know, the way they educate themselves. So don't ever feel like you are entering into this ill-prepared, because you're probably better prepared than the legislators you are communicating with.
And I have to remind myself too, I mean, I work on this kind of thing as part of my living, but I still have to remind myself that these legislators, state level, federal level, even city and county level, they have to deal with bills on all sorts of topics. I mean, things like dentistry are regulated through the laws in the state house. That's incredible to me. There's no way that they can be experts on everything. I mean, even just the time it takes to read through a bill. I know some of them don't get all the bills read that they're voting on. They need the voices of the people who care to call them, to write letters and say, hey, this is what I think about this. This bill says this and I disagree with it. Or this bill says this and I agree with it and you should support it and here's why. They need that input because they simply don't have time to be experts on everything that they have to vote on.
Absolutely.
So can you walk us through a little bit of what it was like to testify before the House of Representatives?
The short version would be anything that could have gone wrong that day did.
And
that's okay. You know what? It's a spiritual battle, right? This is not just a flesh and blood war that we are fighting for life. I know that it happens at a spiritual level. And so crazy things happen that day. But in reality, it was amazing because you could just feel the presence of God in that room. And honestly, when I first walked in, there was a sea of Planned Parenthood supporters all throughout the hallway, right? And it kind of induces this feeling of not necessarily fear, but like this loneliness, right? Of like, yeah. Where is everybody, right? And so it was so wonderful to walk into that room for the hearing and see so many of my pro-life friends in leadership, to have them pray over me and shake a hand, give a hug, right? And so I hope people also recognize that, like, their very presence and their prayers mean a lot to people like me, to know that we're not alone in that. And so that hearing was a little bit wild. If people remember it, I think it lasted, I don't know, 4 or 5 hours. It was not supposed to last that long.
Yeah.
And it was very heated, which is what we all expected. But I think one of the most interesting things that happened that day is the pro-abortion witness sitting next to me made a point in her testimony to say, you know what, I don't support abortion. I would never tell somebody to have an abortion. I'm not saying that. And that struck me. And here she had been kind of saying, laying out points, saying, yeah, abortion is humane. Abortion helped women succeed in the workplace. She was saying all these things. And then she made it a point to say, but listen, I would not be recommending that to someone. And so I kind of felt like there was something really going on with her. And we had this beautiful exchange, totally off camera, at the end of the hearing, where we both were able to turn to each other and say, you know what, I respect you. We don't agree on the issue of abortion, quite clearly,
right.
But we want better. We want better for women. We want better for children. And I respect you for what you've been through and for being willing to share today. Mm-hmm. And for me, honestly, that was probably the most powerful piece, because I feel like maybe I was there that day to plant a seed within her.
Well, and I think it's interesting. I mean, if an abortion supporter is talking to you, they have to realize that they're talking to someone who somebody else tried to abort. I mean, at that point, I feel like there's no denying the significance of the fact that this is a human being we're talking about. We're talking about a human, and here's this full-grown person standing in front of me. This is exactly who we're talking about. That's got to strike them at some point.
Yeah, and I think it really did with her, and I felt really bad afterwards because, you know, and granted, she said some things that made her an easy target in the media, right? And so people had a field day with that. But so I feel like even if she got attacked in the media, I hope that she left that day realizing that, A, you know what, she knows that abortion kills a human being, and I was just living proof of that day. Secondly, that, you know what, I wasn't there to strike out at her, lash at her, hate her, any of those things. You know, I was still willing to listen to her and say, you know what, I respect you for at least showing up today.
Yeah. If you're joining us just now, we're talking with Melissa Oden, who is an abortion survivor from a Celine abortion. And she is also the keynote guest of our annual fundraising banquet at Allen County Right to Life, which is on October 9th this year. I'd encourage you all to go to ichooselife.org and buy a ticket or buy a table and invite some friends. It is our major fundraiser for the year, and we're so happy that Melissa can join us as our keynote this year. So we're having some time now on the program to talk with her about some stuff that you won't be hearing at the banquet, and in particular, her involvement in public policy and testifying for the people who write that public policy and sign it and vote on it and all that sort of thing. So Melissa, I loved that piece about talking to the woman afterwards. Have you had any conversations with elected officials as a result of your testimony where you've gotten to hear their reactions or just had interesting conversations that you could share with us?
Oh, it's always interesting. You know, I think anytime you have a conversation with somebody about abortion, it's interesting. But
that's probably true. Good point.
Yeah, but in the public policy arena, I think it is particularly interesting because it's such a what people view as heated issue, right? Like, mm-hmm. I always kind of have to laugh and go, this should not be heated. It's pretty cut and dry. But it is heated for them because they feel that pressure from both sides on the abortion issue. So, yeah, I mean, I've testified before the State House in North Dakota, in Ohio, where else? I tend to forget where I've been. And, you know, I think what always strikes me is that there have been times where people have actually got up and left the room. Like legislators, literally, I'm taking the podium, have got up and left the room.
Wow.
And I don't know if it's sign of wanting to upset me or show me disrespect, or it's simply that hard for them to hear, right? But I can remember one time in particular, and it was probably back in like 2011, I was in Ohio testifying before the heartbeat bill, which we now see that was introduced on the federal level. And a Democratic legislator actually got up and left while I was taking the podium. And, you know, it touched a nerve within me, right? It wasn't going to shake me, but I definitely recognized what they were doing.
Right.
And as she was getting up to leave, another legislator was furiously scribbling on a piece of paper, and he handed it to me. And he was saying, you know, don't mind her, essentially. Mm-hmm. Don't mind her. This is really hard for her to hear, but you were made for just such a time as this. And, you know, don't doubt, don't worry. And to me, I will never forget that moment, because I think that's just another example of how when times get hard and somebody is attacking us or not wanting to listen, there is always going to be somebody else who is standing alongside, who's going to listen, who's going to support you. And again, we're not alone in this.
Yeah. It also just brings to mind again, and I was reading an article this morning on Facebook that reiterated this too for me. I went on Facebook recently, and I'd suggest everybody else do this too if you're on Facebook. And I followed Planned Parenthood, like every single advocacy group and all of their groups that I could find that were in the area.
You troll.
I know. Well, I'm not really trolling, because it's just I'm following them, and so I have it so that they show up. Yeah, exactly. I'm a quiet troll. I'm hiding under the bridge still.
Yep.
I have it so that they show up first on my news feed, which is a blessing and a curse, because I know what they're talking about all the time, which right now is mostly IUDs. But it also makes me want to throw up every time I open my Facebook page, which is a lot. Yeah. And I'm usually at my desk, and sometimes I'm eating lunch. So it's not very pleasant. But what it does give me is some insight into what the quote other side is talking about. And they posted an article today that was talking about the horror that it is for young women who can't scrape together the amount of money that it takes to get an abortion. So it said, as long as abortion is legal, anti-abortion zealots are making it so expensive so that women can't actually get them. And I was like, well, that's an interesting take, because I didn't know that we were actually regulating the price of abortion at all. And I don't think that we
are. They
don't want any
regulations.
It's an indirect sort of a thing where they say that the more we limit abortion, the more expensive it gets, I think, is what they were going for. But it sounded like we had jacked up the price, like, you know, people jack up taxes on cigarettes or something, which is an interesting concept. So they were talking about, though, how horrible it is for these women who have put together this money and then go in for the appointment and then are told they're like $45 short or whatever, and how just absolutely devastating it is for these women. But thankfully, there's these hotlines that they can call that will give them the rest of the money. It's essentially like a small granting organization that will then call and send a pledge to this abortion clinic to cover the rest of the cost. And what struck me about it, besides the fact that these little granting organizations exist and that that's very interesting, but what struck me about it really is that the people who are writing the article and the people who are running these little phone banking granting organizations, they really care about the women. They really care about the women. That was the whole point of the whole article, is how much they care about the women. Now they're off base, I think, in how they carry out that caring, but they care. And we do too. And I think that we need to express that more. And what you've been saying about those conversations that you've been having has sort of restruck that with me. We need to spend more time expressing that we care, whether it's supporting other pro-life people or supporting our legislators or writing a note to maybe a person like that woman who stood up and walked out at the beginning of your testimony. Just a note that says we care, I think, will go a long ways, because our movement is not based in anger or hate or anything like that. Our movement is based in love. And so first and foremost, people should know that about us before they know anything else, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think how this quote goes, and maybe you know it. The quote says essentially, like, don't tell me what you're against, show me what you're for.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, that's so powerful, because the other side of the abortion issue has done that very well, right? They, and however perverted that sometimes becomes, but they've done this great job of making it clear what they're for. And I think sometimes we get painted as those simply that are against abortion, right? We know all the arguments. You only care about babies before they're born. You don't really care about the women, right? Fill in the blank. And I think it's important that we combat that with the truth and statistics, right? To talk about pregnancy centers and federally qualified health centers when people want to say, you know, if Planned Parenthood is shut down, right? The information about what drives women to abortion, and to be able to respectfully say, you know what, tell me how abortion is meeting the needs of women.
Yeah.
It is not meeting the needs of women. It is not making the world a better place for children and for families, but to be willing to have those conversations, right? I mean, we know the truth about when life begins. But I think the other side does too, very clearly.
Very clearly, yeah. And that's right, a point where we can work on. All right, well, thanks, Melissa, for joining us. Again, Melissa Oden, she's our keynote speaker for the Allen County Right to Life fundraising banquet this year, October 9th, ichooselife.org for your tickets. And we'll love to see you there, and you'll get a chance to meet Melissa and purchase her new book, You Carried Me, if you'd like to purchase that. Thanks so much, Melissa, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Here are some other fundraising banquets coming soon for various affiliates throughout the state. Right to Life of North Central Indiana will have their banquet September 25th at Grace College's Manahan Orthopedic Capital Center. That's at Winona Lake. Featured speaker is Ryan Baumberger of the Radiance Foundation. Go to prolifebanquet.com or call 574-551-0239. ProLifeBanquet.com or 574-551-0239. The Right to Life affiliates of Davis, Martin, and Pike counties invite you to the SJG Sports Complex in Odin, Indiana on October 5th to hear Save One President Sheila Harper. Call 812-486-3658 or go to DavisCountyRTL.com. 812-486-3658 or DavisCountyRTL.com. Join Porter County Right to Life and former Planned Parenthood manager Ramona Trevino at Valparaiso University's Haar Union Hall, November 4th. Get the details at pcrtl.org. pcrtl.org. Right to Life of Johnson and Morgan Counties presents State Senator Greg Walker at Beeson Hall, located in the Franklin Parks and Recreation Building in Franklin, Indiana. That will be November 2nd. Call 317-346-4035. 317-346-4035. Pro-life OBGYN Dr. Christina Francis will speak at the 4-H Fairgrounds Community Building in Columbus, Indiana, September 21st, sponsored by Bartholomew County Right to Life. Get more information at 812-350-0479. 812-350-0479.
You've been listening to I Choose Life News and Views. If you have questions about this program or if you'd like to support the fight for life, please call 260-471-1849 or go to ichooselife.org, because without the right to life, no other rights matter.